welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, email is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and there is the burgeoning YouTube site, which doesn't have a very fancy URL at the moment, but that'll only improve when you guys start subscribing. So check out the YouTube channel on the website, on the links in my Twitter and Instagram bio. You can click across there and subscribe and watch the YouTube videos. Back today again with another of the season in review podcasts. We're going to be covering the New Orleans Pelicans. Quick shout out to Mother Love Bone there for that song. New Orleans Pelicans. Before I get into them, actually, I just recorded a YouTube video covering the top unsigned NBA draft picks for deep dynasty leagues. By the time you're listening to this podcast, that video will be up, so make sure you go and check that out and see. Let me know what you think and have a look. Hopefully, it's some help to some dynasty league players. All right, we start off all these season interview podcasts with the point guard. So let's start there with the Pelicans, and we go straight to Jrue Holiday. Another disappointing season from an injury point of view. He's now played just 74 games in the last two seasons combined. The thing that's really frustrating is he's really good when he plays. The numbers are fantastic when he is actually out there. On a per-game basis, he was the 30th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. That's how impressive he was. Now, we don't need to really look at what he did in the second half of the season, where he was 116th in the last month, because that's when he came back from the injury. He was playing limited minutes, so that doesn't really give a true indication. He was the 30th rank per game is probably the most important thing for Holiday. And even though the fact that he played just 40 games, he was 135th overall value in those 40 games. So he was definitely an impressive player. 14.8 points, 1.3 triples, which is a career high for him. 3.5 rebounds, almost 7 assists, 1.5 steals, 45 and 86. So just great numbers across the board. It's just the health of this league. Now, if he's healthy, we know he's going to be a top 50 player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The problem is, can we rely on him with health, with this leg fracture, this stress reactions in his leg? That's two seasons in a row that it's cost him the second half of the season, basically. And it's going to be really hard to rely upon him as a top 50 player. Now, taking him in the 60s or 70s is almost a guarantee for me. I'd say I'd be taking him around there, because you probably heard me talk about this before. You turn over 6 or 7 players on your standard league roster every season. And if you pick him in the 70s and he stays healthy and you've got a top 30 player, it's a bargain. If he lasts half the season and you have to drop him, so be it. You grab someone else off the waiver wire. There are going to be other guys there. So picking around 60 to 70 and taking him is not a horrible move. It's not like you're taking him at pick 20 and then he plays half a season. That kills you. If you take him in that 7th round, in that sort of 8th round zone, and then he gets hurt, well, you got half a season out of him, and that's pretty good. That's it's not ideal, obviously, but it's a pretty good result. So that's what I think that where we should be looking at Jrue Holiday, with that top 30 potential, but we're just taking him nowhere near that. Now, Dynasty League guys are in a bit of a conundrum, because say he gets past his injury, which is every possibility that he does, and that doesn't impact him further, you've got a real solid player for years to come. But can you take that injury risk on? If you've got a team that's looking to contend this season, I'd be trying to maybe trade him away for some more guaranteed sort of help. But if you're not quite on the money this year, I'd hold on to him, because you do have the makings of a great tandem with Anthony Davis and a really good player in his own right. We forget that he was an all-star in his last season in Philadelphia. I had a question come in about Jrue Holiday. Ping Pong Ball Bry, who's on Twitter at Pirate Bro, where do you think the Pelicans would be if they never traded for Jrue? They could have Alfred Payton and Nerlens Noel instead. They could, you're right. The picks that the Pelicans gave up to get Holiday turned into Nerlens Noel and Alfred Payton, which is, it's not, when you look at it on the surface there, that's not ideal. You could have Noel, Davis, Payton playing together, but yeah, at the time they gave up too much. Giving up that second first round, it was too much for Jrue Holiday, but he is a good player. They could have foreseen this injury to his leg happening. There was no signs of that happening before. So it's hard to judge in hindsight. We never thought necessarily, taking Nerlens Noel then, when they were a team that thought they could have pushed for the playoffs and he wasn't going to play, wasn't a move that they were willing to look into, the Pelicans. So I don't know Look, I would say overall, when you look at it in hindsight now, you go, yeah, Payton and Noel, better than Holiday. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But that's 2 years down the track in hindsight. It was a little bit of a questionable move when it did happen, but not as questionable as what it looks now. I think we need to bear that in mind that, you know, taking guys like Payton and Noel, it's not a complete no-brainer at the time when the trade was done, although it definitely was a little bit questionable giving up that second-round draft pick. I said if Holiday gets back to full health, he's going to be a really good. He's a really good player. He's a guy who can lead them, you know, past the first round of the playoffs, past the eighth seed, along with Davis, along with Gordon, along with Evans, along with, you know, anyone else they decide to bring in. He is a very good player. I am very, very high on Drew Holiday. I have been for a long time. I think there's a lot of talent with him. His last season in Philadelphia, he averaged 18 points, 8 assists. That's some very, very good. And this wasn't Tankapalooza Philadelphia either. This was, you know, Philadelphia who was not the worst team in the league. This was a decent team. He was an all-star. They were a playoff contending team. He was very good. Injuries have curtailed him, definitely. And let's just hope he gets back to normal. That would be fantastic that he can get back to that Philadelphia form, because then we'll see an extremely dangerous New Orleans team. Let's move on to the other point guards on the roster. Norris Cole, a player who I do not like. Nothing personal, Norris. I just don't think he's a good basketball player. I think he's overrated significantly by a lot of people. Now, he is a restricted free agent. The Pelicans did trade for him in the offseason, so you'd think that they would try to match it. I don't know why they would. Because, look, if Holiday's healthy, it's a big if. They've got Holiday. Then when Holiday sits, Tyreke Evans can run the point. They don't need to spend big on Norris Cole. Now, it depends on what sort of offers he gets and all that sort of stuff, but I wouldn't be spending big money on Norris Cole. He's a guy who played 24 minutes a game, 7.6 points, 3.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 2.1 rebounds. It's not that exciting. 233rd in per game value. Per 36 minutes, 225th. So it's not like it's the lack of minutes. Because he did start, you know, also inexplicably for Miami at the start of the season over Mario Chalmers. Could get nothing done there. He's basically a guy who can score and doesn't do that efficiently. He doesn't do much else. Steals, threes, assists aren't high, doesn't rebound. He's just a bit of a nothing player to me. I just don't think that he's great. Only a 72% free throw shooter, 41% from the field. It all depends on value, but if Holiday's healthy, then to me he's the third point guard behind Tyreke and behind Drew. And it's not a huge need. You can fill it with guys. Like they plugged Tony Douglas in, which we'll talk about in a second, and they could grab a guy in the draft, in the second round, as that sort of player to play as the third point guard. I just don't think he's a massive, massive need for this team. A lot of people disagree, and they think that Norris Cole's a great player. He's not someone that I want anything to do with in fantasy leagues, obviously. He's not a 10 or 12 team league guy. He's not a 14 team league guy. He's maybe a 16 team league guy, but even then, that's pushing it to me. I think that's 20 teams and over for Norris Cole. There's just not a lot. Well, it's not a lot that I like about him anyway, as a fantasy prospect. Said he's a restricted free agent, so we don't know necessarily what's happening with him next season. The next two guys I'm going to talk about are unrestricted free agents, Jimmer Fredette and Tony Douglas. We don't know if they're going to be back with this team, and they didn't do a huge amount even when they were here. Fredette's been a bust of epic proportions, 399th in per game value. There were times when he came on and got some minutes and scored, but he's just too small. He's just not an all-round player. 10 minutes a game, 3.6 points, 1.2 assists, nothing else. 38% shooting, 19% from three from a guy who was just a ridiculous three-point shooter. The only thing he's got going for him is he hit 96% of his free throws. That is on 0.9 attempts a game, but he still hit a decent amount. Who knows if they bring him back, it's going to be for a very small contract and he's going to have no fantasy value. The upside for Jimmer Fredette is pretty small. Tony Douglas is a guy that can never seem to stick. I don't mind Tony Douglas. Whenever he gets starters minutes, he's worth it from a fantasy point of view. He played 15 minutes in the 12 games that he played. 4.5 points, 2 assists, 2 rebounds, a steal. There's some okay numbers. Now, he can't shoot. He's a terrible shooter. 37, 62, and then 28 as his three-point percentage is not good at all. But he came in at 281st in per game value. That's a lot better than what Fredette was. And he is able to put up numbers when he gets minutes. So if they're bringing one of those guys back, I think Tony Douglas is probably a little bit of a better fit here. he's definitely a better producer from a fantasy point of view, but the upside from these two guys is it's pretty low, a low upside. Let's move on to the shooting guard position. Eric Gordon, a player who I heaped a lot of shit on at the start of the season because he was absolutely putrid. He could not hit anything. He could not hit shots from the field. He could not hit three-pointers. Hurt his shoulder, and we thought maybe he's done for the season. And then, I don't know what happened. He came back from a torn left labrum early, didn't have the surgery, gutted it out, and became a completely different guy. And I was amazed at what we saw from Eric Gordon. He was the 92nd ranked player in head-to-head per game value. Post All-Star break, he was 88th. He put up some really, really good numbers. Those last 2 months of the season, 14.5 points, 2.7 triples, almost 4 assists, 2.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 79% free throw. Now, the 40% from the field is not good, but he shot 45% from the three-point line. 45. That is on 5 attempts a game. This is over the course of the season. 45% from three from a guy who could barely hit anything at the start of the season. He turned it on to a ridiculous degree. Now, he's always been super talented. Injuries seem to have robbed him of all confidence of everything. Maybe the fact that he injured his shoulder instead of his knee made him, you know, gain confidence coming back from that injury, because he was a completely different player. He's going to be a guy that is not going to be ever really higher than a top 70, top 75 type of guy, but he should be owned in all standard leagues. He should be drafted around that 80 to 95 sort of range. He is still relatively young. He's still obviously talented. He is on a massive contract, though, and that's something that maybe the Pelicans would look to move on from. He does have a $15.5 million player option for next season. You'd expect that he takes that, and he'd be looking to really prove himself, stay healthy, and put up big numbers. I think we're going to see a pretty good Eric Gordon next season, definitely a top 100 Eric Gordon, and I think there's a fair bit of value for him moving forward, because a lot of people are down on him, and I was one of them, but the way he turned it around was absolutely amazing to me. Another guy that we can sort of class as a shooting guard, and that's Tyreek Evans. He plays the one, he plays the two, he plays the three. He's got two more seasons left on his contract at $10 million a season, and definitely a fantasy start. I think that's the best way of putting him. 16.5 points, a 3, 5.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 45% shooting, only 69 from the line. That's a bit of a downer. But other overall, his numbers are great. He was the 28th ranked roto player, 35th ranked head-to-head. Post All-Star break per game, 37th. Now, per game for the season, he was just 63, but he really turned it on. And a lot of that was to do with Jrue Holiday going and him handling the ball. He doesn't play necessarily as well when Holiday's there. We saw the last two seasons with Holiday out, he put up absolutely crazy numbers both times, and that's when he is in control of the offense. So we're going to see a bit of a step back from him. I don't think we see him as a 37th ranked player as he was in those seasons last 2 months. I think that 60 to 70 range is probably the right spot for him. But you know you're going to get rebounds, you're going to get assists, you get steals, you'll get some threes at a horrible conversion, 30% last season, and you'll get some scoring. And he's going to be pretty consistent. His rookie season was one of the best rookie seasons we've seen from ages, and it went downhill from there. But we've seen glimpses of his talent the last couple of seasons when he's been given that opportunity to run things. Now, some of the offensive calls from Monty Williams have been disgusting to see him playing, you know, 1-on-5 and letting the other four guys, including Anthony Davis, just stand around. That's no good. And that's partly Tyreek, that's partly Monty Williams. But without Monty Williams there now, we'll see how they run things. I still think Tyreek is going to get a massive share of the ball handling duties. And that's what I mentioned before. Holiday, the point guard, Tyreek is the backup point guard. And they should be staggering those guys and let Tyreek, you know, Tyreek can start and then Holiday goes off and Tyreek takes the ball and then they stagger them for a good portion of the game and let him handle the ball, let him dominate the ball, because we do see very good results when that happens, especially from a fantasy point of view. Another shooting guard on this roster, Elliot Williams, played 9 minutes a game in his 13 games. There's not really a huge amount to talk about with Elliot Williams. He was 428th per game. He's not really ever going to be anyone who bothers us from a talent level, I wouldn't have thought. Move on to the small forwards. This was a hole during the season. Tyreek did fill the hole early on, but when Jrue went down, we were left with Quincy Pondexter, Luke Babbitt, Dante Cunningham playing that position. Start with Pondexter. He's a guy that I do like. I think there's quite a bit to like with him. He's signed for the next three seasons, so they are invested in him. They did trade for him, sorry, from Memphis, so they knew the contract they were taking on, and he's a guy who can hit three-pointers, which the team does need. They do need someone who can shoot. In 24 minutes a game, he hit 1.2 threes a game at 37%, 7 points, 2.5 rebounds, 42 and 74, so sort of a bit below average percentages, but he's a guy who can shoot. And if they need to develop someone to play that 25-minute bench wing scorer, he can be the guy because he can get hot, he can hit shots in bunches. We look at where he ranked for the season, 287th per game, but again, withdrew out, 159th post-All-Star. He got a bigger role, he was on a new team. Yeah, things were coming good for him. I still think there's a bit of ability in him. I reckon he can duplicate that 150 sort of ranking that puts him outside of 12-team leagues, but 14 and 16-team leagues definitely need to pay attention to Quincy Pondexter because he fits a bit of a role in this team. They don't have a first-round draft choice, so it's not like they're going to be drafting someone to fit into this position. They've got a stack of guys coming out of contract, so there is a little bit of cap space there. But I think that they do like what they see from Pondexter, not necessarily as a starter, but as a bench guy who can play the three, who can hit his shots, and can be somewhat of a floor spacer when they don't have too many of those guys. They tried Luke Babbitt in that role last season. He's an unrestricted free agent coming up. Wasn't a great success. 13 minutes for him, 0.9 triples in that, which is good, but he doesn't do a whole lot else. 4 points a game, 1.8 rebounds, no steals, no blocks, no assists. But he did convert his threes at 51%, which is crazy. 48% from his field goal attempts. Only 68 from the line. But he is a dead-eye shooter. He just doesn't do anything else. And it makes it hard to leave him out on the court. I would much rather Pondexter out there than Babbitt. Babbitt does have the opportunity to get hot at times. And he is a knockdown shooter. But his lack of ability to do much else does limit his ability in fantasy leagues and in the NBA to get a consistent role. 344th head-to-head per game. If you know he's going to play big minutes, you put him in and get a couple of threes from him, and that's pretty much all you're going to get, really. You're not going to get too much more out of Luke Babbitt. Let's move on to the big men now, and that's where everyone is interested in, really. Let's be honest. Let's talk Anthony Davis, who was beastly. That's probably the best way of putting it. He was amazing. His fantasy numbers are incredible. He was the second player in head-to-head value per game, just pipped at the post by Steph Curry. He was number one for pretty much all the season. Slipped a little bit post-All-Star, the fifth-ranked player, but still not complaining too much there. Head-to-head total, roto total, fourth, because of those games that he missed, which he always seems to miss. He played 68 games, 67 the year before, 64 the year before that, yet to play 70 games in his career. But 24.5 points, 10 rebounds, over 2 assists, 1.5 steals, almost 3 blocks, 54 and 81 as percentages. There's pretty much no hole in his game, apart from three-pointers. And there's a chance that he can start hitting those. It's a small chance, but we saw him hit that game winner against the Thunder, which in the end ended up putting the Pelicans into the playoffs. There is a chance that he can start hitting threes at some stage in his career. If you're starting a dynasty league now, he is the number one pick. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You can't take anybody over Anthony Davis for dynasty leagues. He's going to get better and better, and he's amazing to watch. Maybe with a new coach now, Elvin Gentry, we're going to see a new Anthony Davis, a better Anthony Davis unleashed. It's extremely exciting. Where do you take him next year? You take him number one. You take him number one. You take Steph Curry number one. You take James Harden number one. It depends on how you want to build your team, but I can't tell you you're wrong for taking any of those guys. The only concern is the injuries, the slight injury risk, considering he hasn't played 70 games. If he plays 80 games, though, look out. We're going to have the clear number one by a very, very long way, I would say, as he continues to get better. It's a brave man not to take him number one next season. I might be a brave man, but I reckon in a number of leagues, if I had that number one pick, I'd go 50% Curry, 50% Davis. The numbers, you just look at them and go, this is just ridiculous. Yeah, those block numbers win you that category on its own almost. Then you got points and rebounds, and then he chimes in assists as well. You know, two assists is not terrible. And for the last 2 months of the season, he averaged over three assists a game. Steal numbers, percentages through the roof. It's just amazing to watch this guy play, to be honest. We know that. We know how good it's going to be for the next 10 years watching him play, but watching him develop the next 3 to 4 is going to be amazing to see where this guy's ceiling actually is. The other power forward on the roster I'm not as excited about. Clearly, you can't really be as excited about anyone that you are with Anthony Davis. But that's Ryan Anderson. Feel sorry for the guy. He has so much going on in his life with his fiancée, then with the back and neck injury last season, and then he suffered an injury this year that limited him to 61 games. But his game has gone downhill significantly. He dropped from 19.8 points a game to 13.7 points a game this year. Still hits his 2 threes a game, but he only does it at 34%. His field goal percentage was under 40%. Only 4.8 rebounds. No assists, half a steal, 0.3 blocks. A good free throw shooter, a great free throw shooter, 85%. But really, his fantasy value it's limited. He was per game head-to-head 126th. Post All-Star break, 321st. That's really, really poor. Like, really poor. He played, it only consisted of 11 games, and he only got 20 minutes a game. But the shooting was just way off. 8 points a game, 3 rebounds a game, 1.1 threes. In essence, he's basically a three-point specialist. So anyone looking to take him early, I think, is going to be really disappointed. He'll probably be better than he was last season, but he's in a role where he's got to play behind Anthony Davis. If the Pelicans bring back Omer Asik, which they could, he's not going to get 34, 35 minutes. He's going to get 27, 26 minutes and be a shooter off the bench. And it's basically a role player. He's got one more year left on his contract. Be interesting to see what happens after that. But I don't think I'm taking him inside the top 100. And I think in 10-team leagues, I'm definitely okay with not drafting him at all. I think his Dynasty League value is dropping. It's declining. I don't see a huge amount of a bounce back for Ryan Anderson. Unfortunately, as much as I said, I liked the guy. And I loved it when he had that breakout with Orlando. He was a guy that I targeted that year. And it worked out very, very well for me. But I just don't think that he's in a situation here where he's really primed to succeed. He'll hit the threes, but everything else, I'm not that thrilled about it, to be honest. Other guys, Dante Cunningham, he played a lot of the three last year. He's an average player, 25 minutes, but just 5 points a game. He gives you 4 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 0.6 blocks. They're okay numbers, but I don't think he doesn't have a big ceiling. 285 in per game value. That's really, really deep league stuff there. Really showed no sign of improvement throughout the season. He did start and he provides a good defensive presence, but that doesn't translate into fantasy numbers, so we don't need to be too concerned about him from a fantasy point of view. Omer Asik, he's a free agent. Okay, the Pelicans traded a first-round draft choice, so the Rockets are going to get their first-round draft pick this year to get Asik for one season. He played okay. I think the best thing we can say about him is it allowed Anthony Davis to play the four more, which we saw a massive increase in Davis's ability. But Omer Asik as a player, uninspiring. I don't know what the Pelicans are going to do. You'd think they're going to try and bring him back. But Omer Asik's head-to-head per game value, 177. Now, he's a guy that started off, and this happens a lot in a lot of players. In the first two games of the season, if people have big numbers, it becomes a narrative. Now, Asik had, I think, 4 or 5 blocks in that first game. There was like, oh, I'm Asik, you're going to get blocks from him. You don't. He just doesn't block shots. He blocked just 0.7 shots a game for a guy who is a decent rim protector, and he is a big man, a big center. 0.7 blocks, it doesn't cut it from a fantasy point of view. He had 0.8 the season before, and he had one a game in Houston the season before that. He's not a dominant shot blocker at all. Now, rebounding, that's a different story. He got 9.8 rebounds last season, 7 points a game in his 26 minutes, but basically he's a rebound guy. He hit 52% of his field goals, which is okay, and a shocking free throw shooter. So the numbers, they don't look good for him. They're not good. Roto League, you can't own him, 187th in Roto total. And head-to-head, it's a stream if you need rebounds. Nothing to me screams 10 or 12 team league for Omer Asik. He is what he is. He's a solid player in that 150 to 200 range. So we're talking 14 to 18 team leagues. And that's about it. There's not much else for him. I don't think he's going to get better. He's not going to become a better shooter. He's not going to become a better scorer. He's probably not going to become a better shot blocker either. He's going to remain a good defender, a guy that allows Davis to move out, a guy who does protect the rim without necessarily blocking shots. And that's all valuable. But for our purposes as fantasy basketball owners, it's not. Let someone else who loves Omer Asik and thinks he can be a great rim defender, and if he has a game where he gets 4 or 5 blocks, sell out on him because it's just not in his game. He's not a rim protector. He's not a shot blocker. And that's something that people get a little bit confused about with him sometimes. So you've got to try and take advantage of that. A guy who I really like on this team is Alexis Ejinsa. His numbers don't necessarily stand out to you either, but he only played 14 minutes a game. 6.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 0.8 blocks, 55 and 82. So the percentages, you got them locked in. He's a really good percentage guy. Per game, 193 for head-to-head leagues. I would like to see him get more minutes. I would like the Pelicans to let go Omer Asik and play Davis and Ejinsa up forward and play Anderson off the bench and maybe pick up a cheaper big man or re-sign Jeff Withey, who's a restricted free agent. I really like what Ejinsa can do. Whenever Davis is out, Ejinsa plays. He's always a guy you got to stream in and a guy you have to use in daily fantasy leagues. He gets rebounds, he gets points, he gets block shots. And if we have a look at his numbers on a per 36-minute basis, which gives us an idea of what he's able to do when given that starting role, they look pretty impressive. 16.7 points, 11.9 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 1.9 blocks, and you team that with the 55 and 82 as his percentages. It's really intriguing. So I like Ejinsa a hell of a lot, probably a lot more than a lot of people. And I think there's significant value in him. He's a dynasty sleeper for me, someone who I think that depending on what they do with Asik, he could be in line for a much, much bigger role. And if he is in a bigger role, the numbers are going to come because he's always shown that when he gets that opportunity, he can put up big numbers. Now, the guy that I mentioned before, Jeff Withey, is a restricted free agent. His head-to-head per game value at 401 does not excite me at all. He only played 7 minutes a game, 2.6 points, 1.7 rebounds and half a block. But when he gets the minutes, he can do it as well. He can block shots, he can get rebounds, he can score. And he can be that sort of third or fourth big man if they don't want to pay a big contract to Omer Asik and they can bring him back at a pretty cheap price. So he's partially a sleeper, but that's only for really, really deep leagues. He's someone to keep an eye on anyway. That's it for the Pelicans season in review. Reminder to check out the YouTube video on the unsigned draft picks. The next of the season in review podcast will be on the Washington Wizards, so send me through any questions you have on that. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on iTunes. I always appreciate those. And subscribe over on YouTube as well and get those subscriber numbers up. Just finalizing the Red Rock Dynasty League at the moment, so you will receive an email in the next day or two notifying you of your acceptance, or if you have happened to miss out. As I said, if you do happen to miss out on the league, there will be plenty of Red Rock listener standard leagues throughout the season as well, and you can definitely be a part of those ones. But I do thank everyone for the overwhelming number of applications. It's taken me a long time to go through them. I honestly didn't think we'd get this many at all. It's a 16 team league. I thought at times we'd struggle to fill the 16, but no, I could have filled the league 3-5 times over with the amount of applications that come in. So thank you very much to everyone who sent those in. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.